Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 362, : The Day the Music Died.
Well, the day the
I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are James Jones.
This is Awake.
John Lindemann.
Fiddling While Rome Burns.
Rome already burned down, bro.
And Guillaume Vayette.
I will survive.
You're so optimistic. Yes, we are speaking to you on the day that the NPD numbers for November came out. And what that means is we now know that the Wii U is not going to get the turnaround that Nintendo has been, you know, kind of casting as the great hope of this platform. You know, what we've heard all year long is that, you know, wait until Christmas, wait until the holidays, wait until the games are out, wait until Mario, wait until Zelda. And those things didn't work, and the big success, the big turnaround that they predicted, that they told their investors would happen, that they told their fans and their user base would happen, has not happened. It's not going to happen at this rate, and you know, things look really bad, really, really bad. And I'm personally affected by this. Like it has been bothering me all afternoon since this news came out. I don't completely know how to react to it. I don't know what I think of this, except just that I'm sad and I'm disappointed and I'm upset. And, you know, I'm angry at Nintendo for not seeing this coming, for not doing more. I think they've done a lot. You know, I think they've done some significant things to try to change the fortunes of this system. But I don't think any of it was nearly as radical as it needed to be. And you know, we've talked in the past about how with 3DS, they took really drastic measures very, very early because they saw the trend and they saw that it was not going the way that they needed it to go. And they did something about it. And, you know, 3DS is never going to sell as many units as the Nintendo DS. And I don't know if it ever could have. I don't know if Nintendo could have done more with that. But they've done 3DS justice. They've done it right. They've released excellent games for it. At least out of Japan, there's significant third-party support. And people are buying that system. People want 3DS. People do not want Wii U. Now, obviously, we want it. We like our systems. We like our Wii Us. I can't speak for John because he doesn't talk about it much. But
no, I like it a lot.
Yeah. I really enjoy my Wii U, and there are some games on it that I have had a fantastic time with, even, you know, from the very beginning and right up until now, and I'm sure there will be more coming. But I am going to say with utter certainty that Wii U will never be a hit. It is a failure on some scale. Now, that's relative, and mm-hmm. It depends on how you set your expectations and what you think qualifies as success for Nintendo. But
at the very least, I think it's a business failure. I think it's safe to say that.
Yeah, and you know, if you want to talk about profitability, I mean, back in the GameCube days when Nintendo was in third place and they weren't doing that great, but they were subsisting, you know, and the argument that we, a lot of us went to as Nintendo fans was, well, it may not be the biggest seller, but it's profitable and it's working for them. They have found their niche. They have found a way to make it work, and they will regroup and come back and do something bigger and better next time. And they did. And the profitability and the sustainability of GameCube allowed them to set up for, the situation with Wii. And you know, I don't know how much of Wii was actually intentional, and how much of it was kind of right place, right time, or tapping into some unforeseen, you know, vein of enthusiasm and of interest in video games from people who'd never played them before. But that's not going to happen with Wii U. It has not captured the imagination of hardcore gamers. It hasn't even captured the imagination of hardcore Nintendo fans. And I can't tell you how many people I know who have been on our staff over the years, who have been Nintendo fans their entire lives, who don't have the system yet, even a year later, even after the price drops, even after multiple Mario games and a Zelda game and the Pikmin 3 and so many other things and all the announcements. And maybe they'll pick one up eventually when it gets really cheap. But, if Nintendo can't convert their own dedicated, loyal user base to pick up this console, with the initial price, initial offerings, and even after the adjustments, and even after a full calendar year's worth of major releases, I don't think they can save this system. And, if today, if we had gotten the sales numbers from November, and we saw that they had, boosted their sales from, 85,000, I think, in October, which is pathetic. And if they had gone up to maybe 500,000, then I might say, you know what, December's going to be even bigger. And this has, I think that would qualify as a turnaround. It would be a new trend upward and a new slope for what's going on with Wii U. And I think at the very least, it would convince Nintendo themselves and their shareholders and their fans like us that system is going to stick around, and it's going to be the underdog, and it's going to be the scrapper. And again, it would never be in first place. I think we've known that for a while now.
Yeah.
But at least we would know that it's not going anywhere, and it's going to stick around, and there's going to be lots more great games on it, even if they trickle out the way that they have been so far. At this point, I think we're in Virtual Boy territory here. I mean, the raw numbers are better than Virtual Boy.
Oh, God, yes.
But the market scale, is also much bigger.
The scale of the failure is just as bad, if not worse. I mean, considering what they could be doing, and the argument that we've heard this whole year is that, well, maybe it's not just Nintendo, and maybe it's not just Wii U. Maybe no one wants to buy new consoles. Maybe Nintendo would not be doing any better than this, regardless of what the system looked like, or what games were on it, or what the price was. Maybe people just don't want new consoles. And yet, Sony and Microsoft have both sold about 2 million new consoles in the span of about 6 weeks in this country, much less worldwide.
Yep.
And I think it really blasts that whole theory to the ground. And it says, yes, people do want new consoles. People are willing to spend big money on big new systems that they think have a long future ahead of them and have really exciting things coming. And people don't think that about Nintendo's system. For whatever reason, and there are multiple reasons, many, many things went wrong to get to this point.
Yeah, I mean,
but
I think the main problem is a disaster. I mean, I think people don't think about Wii U. That's the whole problem.
There's no real conversation about Wii U enthusiast media at the moment.
No, I mean, look at...
We are fucking it.
I mean, look at how quickly it took 3D World to just completely disappear. No one's talking about 3D World. It came out, it got 10 out of 10 reviews from some outlets, and people are like, that's cool. Anyways, let's talk about Xbox One and PS4.
Yeah, I mean, Super Mario 3D World sold about 250,000 units in the U.S. Now, admittedly, that was only for about 8 days, 8 or 9 days. But it is, over the same period, it is the worst selling 3D Mario game, not only in Japan, but also in America. We know that now. It has not only the worst sales. You might say, well, the raw numbers aren't going to be good because the Wii U install base is not good in the first place.
Yep.
But at least it sold to 70% of current Wii U owners. No, it's less than 15%. It's not only the worst raw sales numbers of any 3D Mario game ever released, it's also the worst attach rate. Mm-hmm. Which means that even the hardcore people who actually did buy a Wii U, like us, mm-hmm. didn't all buy the game.
Hey,
now how many of the people on this panel have bought Super Mario World, 3D World?
Not I.
I have not bought it. It's on my list. I'll probably get it early next year, I would say, but it's definitely on my list.
And that's not to say that we don't all want it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to playing it, but I haven't felt compelled to go get it.
Mm-hmm. And I like 3D Land a lot.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I don't have
you
any
couldn't
excitement.
Be much more hardcore than us.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm still playing through New Super Mario Brothers U, so...
Sure. No, I mean, that's a very valid reason. And to be fair, a lot of people are probably doing that because that game now comes with a system if you buy it.
Yeah.
So that could be true of a lot of people. And I do think that this game will have legs. Now, for this month, 3D World was probably outsold by Knack.
Oh, that's fucking terrible.
That's you know, I don't have the raw numbers for Knack, but based on you know the projections
you know how it is
and
around
the attach
a console
rates,
launch, though, people will buy any game just to play on it.
Well, I mean, it is right? Yeah.
So that's kind of, I think that's kind of misleading.
Yeah, but that wasn't true for New Super Mario Bros. U. I mean, I think that you really don't have to be a genius to see this coming. If you look at the launch numbers for Wii U a year ago, they were horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the potential, clearly, now that PS4 and Xbox One are out, you can see there is pent-up demand for this.
Yeah, there's buzz around those consoles, right?
PS4 showed up on Amazon today, and everybody was tweeting about it immediately. Hey, if you still want a PS4, it's on Amazon right now. Sold out in 30 minutes.
Yeah, okay? And it's the same thing with Xbox One. I mean, every single day I see tweets, Xbox One's in stock at BestBuy.com. PS4 is in stock at Amazon. It's still a story. It's an ongoing story. The Wii U is not a story. Super Mario 3D World is not a story.
Whether it's a story or not, people just don't want it. And to be fair, people never wanted it in the first place. On launch day, it was a total dud.
I bought my Wii U at Target a week after launch. I saw they had them in stock in the morning. After work, I walked into Target, bought it, came home. And then I did the podcast. And you remember, I recorded the episode the day it was downloading the stupid patch.
Yeah.
Because I timed it during the recording session.
Yeah.
I mean, I had no issue getting one. Here's the thing. I bought the Wii U that day. The reason I bought the Wii U that day, and I don't know what I said in the episode. I'm sure I gave some sort of half-hearted defense of why I bought it. I bought the Wii U that day because I'm on a fucking podcast that talks about Nintendo games. I mean,
thank you for your service.
To a certain extent, I kind of had a responsibility to get that system.
Yeah.
I bought it
on launch day because I really wanted one. I was excited for it. You know, I had played it at two consecutive E3s, and I wanted the Wii U. I wanted to play
New Super Mario Brothers U.
And see, yeah. I'd played the Wii U at one E3 because I missed the E3 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I played demos where you drew lines.
The one before.
And angles.
No, but you know, some of those demos were actually quite competent.
Mm-hmm.
They did a good job of showing what you might be able to do with the system, but I was never really excited for the Wii U. And Guillaume's, you know, you play demos, maybe so, but I played a damn sight more Wii U than most of the general public had.
Well, I mean, sure, yeah.
I had way more access to that system than pretty much anybody else did at launch because Nintendo made no effort to say, hey, we have a system coming out. It's new. Look at this. I mean, I think I mentioned on the show back in September that I was starting seeing PS4 ads.
Yeah, and I mean,
It actually got to the point where I was just sick of seeing them.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't walk 10 feet without seeing that Taco Bell PS4 ad. Like,
oh my god,
Jesus! I was
seeing that thing in my sleep.
Yeah, it's like stop showing it, you know.
But at the same time, they at the very least made sure you fucking knew there was a PS4 coming out. Family members who don't play games knew there was a new system coming out.
I mean, what's sad to me is that I see more TV ads for Windows Phone than I do for Wii U.
It's selling about as well as Windows Phone, maybe not even as well.
So, yeah, what exactly is Nintendo of America doing? Like, other than Reggie showing up to talk about Cranky Kong on TV, like, what are they doing?
I don't know. And here's,
yeah.
To me, this is the problem. To me, the problem with the Wii U starts in 2000. I'll say 10.
Yeah,
maybe even before, maybe 2009, and that is. Nintendo got, best way of putting it, they got complacent. The Wii made them a boatload of money, and I think
they were just euphoric on Wii.
I don't think they understood why Wii was successful.
Yeah.
I really don't think, and I don't think we understand why Wii is successful. I don't think there's anybody out there, and this is probably going to take some time to figure out, who can say definitively, Wii was successful because blank. Because I think no matter what you put in that blank, you're probably being reductionist.
Yeah.
Wii was successful. Like one thing we had for itself was that there was nothing else like it, right? And
well,
you can't say that about the Wii U at all.
Well, to an extent, but I think that is novelty is certainly part of it. But I think it's a broad spectrum of things that sort of coalesced into.
Yeah.
What,
well, I mean, it presented a new style of gaming that was visually easy to sell and market.
I think
was
I think
it
more
though
importantly,
because those first Wii ads were not very clear what was going on. We had conversations about it. It's actually kind of hard to market Wii games sometimes.
It was the Google Glass of new consoles at the time. It was magical. It presented an opportunity to interact with technology in a way that no one had ever done before. And it had that kind of magical gadget fever that followed in its wake. People saw that and they said, I'd have no idea how that works, but I want to try it for myself. And it's something that even, you know, something really exciting on the horizon like Oculus Rift is going to have a very hard time capturing because you can't see what the people inside that helmet sees, right? So unless you try it for yourself, it's very difficult to understand what's going on there and why it would be appealing.
So,
but with Wii, you saw people do it and you said, I can't believe that actually works. And it kind of does, you know, it kind of did what you thought it would do. There's nothing like that. And, you know, we've talked for a long time about the identity problems and the communication issues of trying to explain Wii U and what it's for and what it does and why you should want it. I have to give our show credit and our panel a lot of credit because we saw this coming from a mile away and we said, look, this is a serious issue. I do not even know how to explain this system to my family. And I spend hours talking about this every week. Like, if anyone can explain this, it should be me. It should be us. And when I don't really know what to grasp onto, it really tells you that this system is designed with no clear vision whatsoever, with no clear marketing direction, with no clear branding. And it's confusing. It's a confusing product. And you really, I mean, I didn't even see ahead of time how much of a problem that was going to be. I think in hindsight, you look back and you say, God, what a disaster this has been.
If you
can't tell people why they should want your product, you're not going to be able to sell it. And that's exactly what happened.
I'm trying to think what the most apocalyptic statement we made on Vision.
It wasn't apocalyptic enough. The most dire, concerned thing that we could have possibly said about Wii U, it wasn't dire enough. It doesn't match the current reality. This
really
is much worse than I could have ever predicted.
To me, the problem, like I said, isn't just that they don't. To me, the problem is they never understood Wii. I don't think, like I said, I don't think we fully understand Wii either. And I think they never got out of the mindset that they're some kind of magical joy wizards. And they aren't. I mean, I played the N64. There are long bastions of just nothingness and no joy. I think they drank their own Kool-Aid, that they're capable of producing these magical things that people will just love. And I don't think they ever looked back and said, hey, this was successful because we had, I can't say definitively why it was successful, but we had a clear message. We had a very targeted marketing campaign. And we said, look, we're in a situation right now in the GameCube era that is untenable to us. We cannot continue to build these.
If you think GameCube was untenable,
like they could continue to build systems that would be in hardware races.
The thing is, they thought. I think the mistake that they made with Wii U was they thought that they could pretty much base another console with the controller, with a novel controller, regardless of what it does, regardless of whether or not that controller is actually ill-conceived or not.
Regardless of whether or not it's actually novel.
Yeah. They made the mistake of thinking that they could hook people in with another novel controller, despite the fact that they were pretty much ignoring a lot of other parts of the console or features of the console that their competitors were absolutely killing, and those features were bringing people in to Xbox, Xbox 360, PS3. I mean, people go to those consoles for being able to download your games whenever you want, for being able to...
And Steam, too. I mean, don't discount the way people are using... People are now using their PCs like consoles. They're
exactly
playing with controllers. They're connecting with their friends through this very simple-to-use interface through Steam. And there's a very thin line between the experience of playing on a PC with Steam and playing on a console. And I think that...
Yep.
You know, I think any of these companies ignores the lessons learned from that at their own peril.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Wii controller was very not intimidating for people who had never picked up a controller. And the gamepad is the opposite of that. Yeah. And, you know, like my girlfriend played through Super Mario World, the 3D world, with a sideways Wii remote. Because that is so much simpler and so much less intimidating.
I mean, I don't think it's a technically intimidating device. I think it's...
There's a lot of buttons.
It's visually intimidating.
Yeah. I think it's more monolithically intimidating. It's huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I once jokingly compared it to the GameCube keyboard controller.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's a big thing to hold in your hands. It's not heavy. It's if there's anything magical about the Wii U, it's how unheavy that thing is. How just ridiculously light it feels considering all the stuff inside of it.
Well, also the fact, too, that, I mean, it has all these buttons on it, and then it's like, wait a minute, so there's actually a touch screen as well with a whole bunch of stuff on there that I can interact with, and there's menus upon menus, and, you know.
And well, there's also motion control.
Not everybody's playing Monster Hunter U, John.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, people have complained about the interface being so hard to... I mean, how hard was it to even get into, what was it, get into Miiverse, get your friends list?
Oh, we don't want to talk about that.
I mean, there's stuff like that where, you know, it's supposed to be a touchscreen, simplistic interface, but in actuality, it's more complex.
But see, that's, to me, that's not necessarily because it is inherently more complex. I think it's that there's a lack of design understanding on how to build interfaces. And to an extent, that's
totally
their
agree.
Own doing, but to an extent, that's other people. I mean, to me, the biggest problem that I see right now with the Wii U is that it comes off as an incredibly quirky device. Now, the Wii also came off as an incredibly quirky device, but for whatever reason, it managed to sort of separate itself in such a way that it continued to generate conversation. I think they were lucky enough that a general media conversation, i.e. non-enthusiast media, carried the system enough that even the enthusiast media had to really talk about it, even if they didn't want to. I think right now there's just no energy behind the Wii U, and there's no reason for, you know, a major multi-platform outlet to spend a lot of time on it, because if there's no energy, it's not generating clicks.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good
clicks,
point.
It's not generating
there's
energy.
No momentum here. Like, it, you know, when people are not playing Wii U, they're not buying Wii U games, that means they're not talking about it. It means no one's writing about it except, you know, it, the kind of things that we're doing, which is, you know, it's the end of the road. And that, you know, and that certainly doesn't encourage anyone to go out and buy it. So yeah. There's no upward trend here. There's no cresting over the horizon. There's no, it's all going to get better from here, guys. I mean, we already heard that all year long. And I got to tell you, it's not getting better. This console is not going to get better. Not the way that they're not on the current trajectory. I mean, they have to take a very, very hard turn in order to save this, and
how?
I don't even know what saving Wii U looks like.
Well,
I mean, it's not going to be very glamorous. It's not going to be
saving Wii U looks like. And before we try to dive into any kind of economic discussion, to me, saving Wii U looks like this: Nintendo doesn't lose a lot of money on it, and with 3DS going, they're able to maintain fiscal in the black.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, the Wii U, the judgment criteria for Wii U is not a boat anchor.
Cut your losses.
Yeah, and right now,
whatever that means, but don't hemorrhage money on a system.
Oh yeah, literally,
that's never
cut your
going
losses.
To be
so here's the thing: I don't think Nintendo can, from a political standpoint, bail on a console.
I'm not even suggesting bailing.
No,
I'm not.
I'm but saying I'm
just saying, you know, you can't spend a ton of money to try to keep turning this around because none of this is working.
That's the whole thing. Like, so you're not going to dump any money into marketing, you know? What's the point of that? So where do you go from here?
So marketing, I mean, a marketing budget would probably help some.
Yeah, I agree.
But like Johnny said, you're throwing money at, you know, you're betting on a dead horse.
Oh, I think there's still a huge, huge population of people who don't even know what this is. They've never heard of Wii U. They don't know any. Think about this. How many people don't even know anyone else who owns a Wii U?
Exactly.
There's no word of mouth whatsoever because the install base is so bad.
All right, here's the thing, and I've been possibly agitating longer than anybody on the show so far for them to start just blowing out money on advertising. And I think I was doing it like September before the system launched.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm absolutely against that position. And here's why. They should not spend an extra dime on advertising until they have a consistent fucking message. A message that makes this a compelling product. Because otherwise you're just pissing that money away. They need to have a campaign built around selling what this system can do and built around building momentum for the system. And that might mean wait till there are games that you want to talk about. Wait until you have things in place. Wait till you can show people, hey, this is why this is special. This is why maybe you're going to go get a PS4 anyway, but this is why you should also have one of these.
Yeah.
They need to start considering, are we a second console? And if we are, how can we make sure we are in the most number of houses? Mm-hmm. And to me, the best way to say that for them is to say, we are going to produce exclusives at a rate that is as best we can. And that if you're buying it just for our exclusives, you'll be happy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they can produce games any faster than they already are.
The only way they can do that, and this is where things start to get hairy, is they need to go hit those third parties they've got a second party kind of relationship with hard.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think they're getting burned by a couple things. I think they're getting burned. Third party stuff is definitely burning them because they've become over, and this has taken time for them to dig this hole for themselves, but they have pretty much become, I mean, they get some third party stuff. I mean, if you look at the NPDs, I mean, about half of the top 10 games are actually on Wii U. But
they're not actually selling on Wii U.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. I mean, it's a third-party gesture.
I mean, these poor publishers. I feel bad for companies like Ubisoft that are actually releasing games on Wii U because they're not selling.
Yeah, they're just not selling.
And that's not going to continue much longer.
And the other thing is their first-party franchises are being just beaten into the ground at this point. I mean, come on. Make a Metroid game.
How many
game.
More Mario games can we take? I don't know if you guys saw the article by Emily Rogers this week was excellent. And it basically said, you know, it's talking about how Iwata's been telling people that, you know, it only takes one game to turn this whole thing around. And that's just not true. And it even conflicts with things that Iwata himself, as well as Reggie, have said consistently in the past.
Absolutely.
Which is that we have to build a portfolio of diverse games that people want to play, because that's how you sell a platform, is on the library. It's not on a single game.
You can sort of hedge his statement by saying it may take that one game to sort of crystallize that portfolio.
Sure.
That those games, there's all the games that make up the wings of the portfolio that were there, but you need the core game to sell it.
But the core game alone
isn't going to sell the system.
And
there's
if
not
the
going to be a Mario,
Mario
64.
You know, then I know that was the other part of her article, which I thought was, you know, absolutely right. I mean, preach it from the mountaintop. There's too many Mario games.
There are.
Absolutely.
You can't have an entire publisher only release games in one franchise. And it's obviously not every single game they release is Mario, but every game that they pin their hopes on, every game that they position as being the savior of this system has Mario in the title. And it hasn't worked for the past three Mario games they've released on Wii U, and it's not going to work on the next three. I'm sorry. No. Mario Kart 8 might turn out to be fantastic. It is not going to be the system seller.
So here's
the
Smash won't
thing.
Either. I mean, and, because
no,
Smash
Brothers won't either.
Who's going to be on the cover of that? Mario.
Well, they're not going to not put Mario. John's like, no Mario on the cover. Fuck that.
No, I'm just saying, like, who's going to be the best, the flagship character in that game?
Dr.
Mario.
Kawashima. Yes. Do it.
When was the last Mickey Mouse movie that came out?
Like theater movie?
Like you don't have to pimp out your best character nonstop in order for that character to remain iconic and meaningful to the audience.
So here's the thing, and this is what I'm a bit worried about, is when I said to me this whole problem started 2010-ish, I think with the absolute moronic sales that New Super Mario Brothers Wii got, and they're baffling. Those numbers were absurd.
Mm-hmm.
And with
of course,
the
that was selling to an existing humongous user base.
It was. And with the drunken success that we got them, I think they're still sort of lost as to how, like, they feel like, well, we'll just hit the same notes and we'll get the same results.
Well, of course. I mean, look at New Super Mario Brothers U. I mean, you remember when we were talking about, Nintendo Land and just the very lackluster lineup launch games that Nintendo showed for the launch last year. And Reggie's out there saying, look, guys, we got a Mario game for you at launch. I don't know what else you want.
That was
their stance is, look, we made another one of those that you liked so much the last time and that sold 30 million
copies.
The thing
is, they made two of those. There were two that year.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's freaking ridiculous. I mean, all right, so to John's point, though, you can't just trot out the one franchise, but
Well, but
Zelda's going to take time. I mean, they've already pushed a Zelda game out. But
yeah, but I mean, even with that franchise.
So what do you
really
do?
Nobody's caring about that.
Push out a real
anymore.
Wii U Pokemon game?
Aside from Nintendo people. I mean, but that's the whole thing. Like, it's the same thing over and over again from Nintendo. Pokemon, Mario, Zelda, Pokemon, Mario, Zelda. There's nothing else coming from them. That's the problem. They're guitar heroing their own fucking franchises.
Yeah. So your suggestion isn't that they need to diversify which of their franchises that they're hitting. It's that they need to do something else besides the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, those all used to be event games. Pokemon still is. Those are still event games just by the fact that it's Pokemon because it's so huge. But Mario games, like 3D World.
Well,
3D World was not an event game.
The other thing about Pokemon is that they only release the big Pokemon games on handheld. So one of the problems with Mario and Zelda is that they alternate. So like every 2 years, if not more often, lately it's been even more often, there's a new Mario or a Zelda game. It's not always on the same platform back to back, but there's always a recent Mario or a recent Zelda game. And I think they're saturating. And I think these franchises, as much as I absolutely love them, I want Nintendo to make something new and different.
Yeah.
And you know, I it's not just that, because they are making other games. They are doing new franchises, although at a very, very slow rate. But these franchises, just like Guitar Hero, just like Assassin's Creed and Tony Hawk and everything else, they need rest because they get old. Okay. They do get repetitive and they do get old.
What's going to be the DJ here of the Mario universe? I mean,
I don't know.
You mean DJ Hero 2 that sold like 50,000 copies? I mean, that's scary, you know, but we're already way down there. I mean, when Nintendo releases one of the best Mario games ever made and it sells only 250,000 copies in its first month, the writing's on the wall, people. This is bad. This is really, really bad.
Think of it this way. When Nintendo sells releases one of the best Mario games ever made, and half of the panelists of one of the longest-running Nintendo podcasts doesn't have the game almost a month later.
Yeah.
That's not great.
Yeah. It's not good. That's for sure.
That's not great.
Yeah.
And I don't know what...
Because you guys... It's not that you guys don't want to play that game. It's that you don't feel like you need to play it right.
Exactly.
Away.
I don't need to play that game.
Desire of, oh my god, I'm so ready for a new Mario game. No one feels that way. There's so many fucking Mario games.
Played 3D World like 2.5 years, 3D Land like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah. You know, it's Mario Burnout at this point. It's like, it's cool, but.
Oh, whoa. Mario Burnout.
Yes.
The racing game. Yeah, let's get Criterion on that.
Oh, nice.
If Mario Kart 8 was more experience. Like Burnout, I would be...
Nintendo has really been risk-averse with the games that they've been releasing on Wii U, and they haven't really been producing anything, even for the eShop, even like smaller-scale kind of unique games. But supposedly, they've got this vault of ideas that they sometime, you know, like pick ideas from. So why aren't they doing that? Like, or is it what they're supposed to be doing? Like, or are they supposed to?
Does that vault exist?
Well, I don't know. Like, people keep talking about it. You hear Dylan Cuthbert? How do you pronounce his name?
Cuthbert.
But those are game ideas. They said nah.
Right, like he'll be, oh, well, you know, I've got this idea for a game that I want to propose to you, and oh, well, yeah, we came up with something like this a couple of months ago.
To me, what they probably need to start considering, they need to build excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And they have me on the hook for one game, which is X. I mean, that's the game I'm most ramped up for, and I probably heard about that game almost 2 years before it's going to come out. And as frustrating as that shit is, like, why is that game exciting? It's different. Sort of. It's big, it's expansive, it's got mechs in it, so it's a little bit in my wheelhouse. But, I mean, it's a thing that stands out from the rest of everything else.
Yeah.
There's only been one other game like it. And that game is amazing. So, I mean, what do you do? Do you go back to what they were doing late in the Wii U's life cycle, or right, excuse me, late in the Wii's life cycle, which is you start tapping companies to make things like this? Like, do you go after like something like you did with The Last Story, and you finance the creation of a game? Well, they're already doing that. I mean, they're basically paying Platinum's electrical bills at this point. I mean,
But that's the thing. I mean, that would just be. I don't think that would really help them, because that's just it's already a well-worn franchise. I mean, everything that everybody comes to Nintendo for is just to be wowed and see something completely different that they've never seen before. And all Nintendo is doing now is just creating the same stuff that they create year after year. There's nothing on this console. There's nothing coming next year on this console that is going to set the world on fire.
Oh no! Oh, of course
there's
not.
Nothing. You're going to get the same.
Look, I don't want to rule that out, John.
Smash Brothers.
I don't think there's anything coming out next year that's going to turn the system around. But there might be something coming out that we don't even know about that could, you know, really blow our socks off. I mean, I think that's absolutely possible. And, you know, I don't want to go on too much longer on this, because I don't want us to start repeating ourselves. But, you know, I do feel like, you know, the constructive criticism of what they need to do, that will spool out over the next few weeks, because there's going to be plenty of time for people to ponder this and to get really depressed and down in the dumps about it, or to dance on Nintendo's grave, which is, you know, premature, obviously. But I want people to understand that we love Nintendo, and the reason that we're talking about this and the reason that we're taking it seriously and spending this much time on it is because I want people to understand the reality of what's happening right now. I want people to understand just how grave this situation is, because that's the truth. You know, I mean, I want our discussion to reflect what's actually happening here. And that doesn't mean we can't have fun with these games and talk about how much we enjoy them and look forward to things on this platform. But I think it would be a disservice to our listeners and to, you know, our community and to Nintendo fans to go out there and say, you know what, they're going to be fine. Because the Wii U is not going to be fine. And that's not me telling you to not buy the system. But I think you need to be extremely realistic and fully aware of what you're getting into if you buy the Wii U at this point, because this system may not be getting new games on it 2 years from now.
Yeah, that's a definite possibility.
The only way I see the system not getting new games on, and now I'm not saying it's going to get a lot of new games. You could be in for late N64 era style games here.
Right, two games a year.
The only way I see this not getting any new games is if Nintendo totally bails on the system and releases another one.
Yeah.
There's no way they can not have a console that they're actively supporting. Because once they do that, they've basically said, we're out of the game.
Well, no, I agree with you. I think they are, I mean, I seriously think they are probably vastly accelerating their plans for the next system.
Yeah,
I think they'd be idiots to not do that.
But here's the thing. Can they sell a system after that kind of torrential failure?
Sure. Yes.
Yeah, people will still buy Nintendo games with the right lineup.
Yeah, they're not Sega. They didn't release a 32X and Sega CD. And
Sega was three failures deep when Dreamcast happened. And they were on very financial, I mean, very, very rocky ground financially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, theirs was a money issue, not so much the ground is poisoned. But
also, no, they did lose the trust of their fans. I mean, with so many add-ons that didn't amount to anything, like 32X had, 32 games at most? And it just, I don't think, you know, like most Sega fans just skipped their hardware, I think, until maybe the Dreamcast, but then it was too late.
Dreamcast did quite well for them amongst their core fan base. It was just a problem of, at that point, they had more rivals now.
Sure.
I mean, they never really competed with Sony for real, because they died before the PlayStation really drove the stake through the heart of the Saturn.
Yeah.
The Saturn was a self-defeating machine by definition.
Look, the problem with Dreamcast is that it wasn't successful enough to save that company.
Right.
Right.
That was the last stab.
But they were putting out games for that. The Dreamcast was getting games.
Mm-hmm.
And
not really many third-party games, but it was
Sega was putting out a volume of fire, including impressive and unique games that is, I think, historically, maybe underappreciated.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. They were arcade games.
But they were good.
Sure, but they were arcade games, and arcades were dead for a while, and, you know, okay. like, ultimately, the discs that you put in your Dreamcast were, you know, like, the games that you got were pretty shallow, and probably didn't hold your attention for that long.
I think Dreamcast, it is a fair comparison, because Dreamcast performed better than Wii U is right now. And that's the truth. Wii U is doing worse than Dreamcast did a year after its release. But again, Dreamcast was launched from a position of Sega being almost bankrupt. So the problem with Dreamcast is not that it was a huge failure, or that it was a bad system, or that it had bad games. The problem is that it wasn't successful enough to save the company. Wii U doesn't have to save Nintendo.
No,
Nintendo has to save Wii U, and I don't know how they're going to do it, but they've got to do something to make this not a joke, not a complete and utter joke.
Yeah, well, I mean, they can't, to me, they cannot kill the Wii U without hurting the trust of their consumers.
Well, I think they need to really tread carefully going forward, right? Because you have to think, I mean, I would say, if I were to predict, I would say probably a new Nintendo console in like 2016. Which is interesting, because at that point, both the PS4 and the Xbox One will kind of be in their primes, right? But what if, down the line, this actually turns into one of the best things to happen to Nintendo, because they realize what they've done wrong, and they come out in 2016, maybe 2017, with a console that's more powerful than both the Xbox One and the PS4.
But not just more powerful. They need to learn
they need
to get the third parties on their side before you even make the console.
Yeah, but John... Even if they accomplish this, they're more powerful for what, 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, Wii U was more powerful than 360 and PS3 when it launched last year, and that did it no favors whatsoever.
No, because guess what? The Wii U version of, like, Assassin's Creed looks worse than the PS3 version.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it could be pretty disruptive, though, because, you know, based on how long these life cycles are.
It could be.
So, I mean, there is an open question, and we're looking way, way, way downstream with this one, and... It comes up constantly, and people like Kohler like to pontificate on it. What is the next state for console releases? I mean, with the PS4 and Xbox One out, where do you go? Now, there are obviously, you can still get more powerful, because PCs now are able to produce higher resolution graphics than those consoles can produce at launch. But what's the point where you say, okay, what's it worth? I know we have this conversation every console, like, well, this is it. This is as powerful as they're going to get. But do you continue to produce big, beefy machines, or do you try to come up with solutions that leverage power in different ways? I mean, you can already see it with the PS4 and Xbox One both have the ability to do, what is it, like cloud computation? Or some kind of weird nebulous thing they've spoken about?
Mm-hmm.
At what point is that what they go for?
Well, so I mean, it'll be new features. It's not, won't really, I mean, graphics will be kind of a given, obviously, but
yeah, but I'm just curious, like, is it really going to be about releasing the big beefy system? Because if your box is just a view onto your personal cloud space to do your processing, at that point the box becomes a non-issue, because the box is just a connection. They can upgrade your capacity just by upgrading their servers. So, I mean, it's hard to project out what the industry would look like in 2016, because Nintendo, if they release a console there, is going to have to be projecting what the industry will look like. Yeah, it's going to have to be projecting what the industry will look like in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Or they're just going to do their own thing and probably make something that's more of a toy, you know, something that's more what Nintendo is used to make.
Well,
I don't really see them going like big into cloud computing. I mean, they're barely on the internet.
No, but that's the point. If they release a console in 2016 that 2 years later looks like it may well have been released in 2006, where are they at?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If it was more powerful,
like,
than
I think
the Xbox
anything
One,
that if they decide to release another console that early in the life cycle, that like that midpoint in the life cycle of their competitors, what they release needs to not look like ancient history a year and a half down the road when their competitors are announcing their next system.
You know, whether it's tech, whether it's the games, whether it's the controller, what it comes down to is they have to release a system that people want. And they failed. They failed with Wii U. Now, maybe they can make people want it more than they want it now. Maybe they can find something there.
But I think
we're looking forward to the next system, I'm not going to guess anything specific, but they have to make a system that people actually want, and they have to do some. They have to do better. I mean, and that's really reductionist, but it's very simple stuff here. You know, you've got to design a product that is appealing to a wide variety of people, and I don't know what ever told them that Wii U was the answer to that question this time around. But whoever told them that this was the way to go, they should have slapped them and said, you know, we got to do better than that. And I think we can look back now and say, look, Wii U has a lot of things going for it, and it may be a system that personally we enjoy, but this was a big mistake. And it was a mistake on multiple fronts. It wasn't just one thing that they did wrong. They screwed this up really badly.
They effectively PS3'd themselves. I mean, they made a console. They broke their cardinal rule, their golden rule, which is to always make money on the console. And they made a console that cost them a lot to make. This gamepad is the real boat anchor that we're talking about here. It costs way too much money for what people are getting out of it, and they're paying for it, you know? They just can't make enough money on the console, and it's overpriced for the value that people perceive in it. So therefore, it's just like the PS3. People are like, fuck, I'm not paying $600 for a PS3.
Well, PS3 actually kind of made a turnaround in the end, but the only reason it was able to do that is because it was so powerful up front that it could actually hang for 7-8 years. And that is not the case with Wii U.
Let me ask one kind of backward-looking but sort of forward-projecting question. Is the Wii U's failure because they rushed the first time? Because they had investors all over them when the Wii sales started to drop off. And to me, we spoke about this on the 3DS. We spoke about it on Wii U early. But to me, maybe the core problem here is that they just rushed themselves because they got scared. Is the Wii U really just... We say they're a conservative company. I wonder if the Wii U is such a conservative play, they just chat themselves. And if it is, then it's not a marketing problem. It's not a software problem. It's a fundamental design conceit problem. If that's the case, is there any saving in that?
I don't know.
Well, there's a lesson to be learned.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see if they back off.
I mean, that's probably part of it.
And the thing is, they didn't need to fear their investors because, guess what? One person owns the majority of that company, and he's the former fucking president.
Kids or grandkids, I guess.
Well, yeah, now it's his kids and grandkids. But if he was coming around saying you need to fix things, then sure.
Yeah, listen to him.
Well. Yeah, but their general investors, they could just tell him to screw off.
Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know. We need to wrap this up. I think we're going to take a break. When we come back, when we come back, we're going to refocus on games, and we're going to take some emails, and we're going to have a good time with the rest of this episode. And I'm sorry if this was a...
In 2 months when we come back.
Yep. We're going to have to do another email about what do you like about Nintendo.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Christmas games.
Oh, God.
So we're going to hold hands over Skype and sing songs. I apologize if this was depressing for people or if this was a downer or if, you know, people just don't want to hear this stuff. If, you know, I understand if you don't like hearing about the way things are and you want to, and you just prefer to live in the fantasy of, hey, I like all my Wii U games. What's the problem? And that's not a fantasy. I mean, that's a legitimate viewpoint. And if you don't care about the future, if you don't care about upcoming releases, if you don't care about being able to play other companies' games on your console, if you don't care about whether Nintendo will still be supporting this console 3 or 4 years from now, then that is legitimate. I mean, I think that's fine. If you live in the moment and you're like, you know what? Mario 3D World is the greatest game I've ever played, and I'll be happy if they never release another game for this system. Well, guess what? You're not that far off from the truth. And, I hope that's enough for you. It's not for me. I'm in it for the long haul, obviously. You know, I've been writing and talking and podcasting about Nintendo for 14, almost 15 years now. And I don't know that I've ever been this down on a platform. Mm-hmm. And it's sad because it's a platform that I like. But it's not working for them, and it's not working for most people. All right, well, I don't know how to end this gracefully. We're just going to cut it off. We're going to come back, and we're going to have fun with the rest of this episode.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First up this week, we have a review of Wii Fit You by Scott Thompson for the Wii U. Dust off your Wii Balance Board and get ready to buy a Pokéwalker Mii Edition. Wii Fit You is the best Wii Fit experience to date.
Agreed.
Oh yeah.
There you go. We also have a review mini of 3D Super Hang-On by Guillaume Vaillet. This guy.
This guy, yeah.
The sequel to the game that made Yu Suzuki famous, Super Hang-On is now available on 3DS Classics, or 3D Classics, or whatever the hell they call it, because Sega's not shy about porting their games to that platform. With 3DS motion controls, it's exactly like riding on a giant plastic motorcycle, and will in no way break the titular 3D effect.
Right.
We have an import review for Hatsune Miku Project Mirai 2 on the 3DS, the Japanese 3DS, and that review is by Don Koopman. So, it has come to this. We're talking about a Vocaloid rhythm game on 3DS, and we have to because Don thinks it's fantastic. So, if you're the kind of fan who will pay 6,000 yen to see a hologram sing a digitally generated voice, then you probably live in Japan. If not, get ready to import a 2DS. Just like James.
Not for this game!
Don really did love this game, by
Don
the way.
Don loves it!
We have an import review of Yumi's Odd Odyssey for 3DS by Danny Bivens.
That's not the game name in Japan.
Sayonara Umihara Kawase?
Yeah, actually, that's dead on.
Awesome. This odd platforming series has been part of the Japanese gaming canon for a while, and the rest of the world will finally get to experience playing as an anime girl trying to swing from platform to platform using her fishing rod so that she can reach a magical door and do it all over again. Finally. Turns out Yumi's Odd Odyssey, as it will be known in Western markets, is actually pretty fun.
Played other versions of the game, it's actually legitimately a fun platform.
It looks pretty amazing.
All right, and continuing with our never-ending theme of Sega 3D classics, we have a review of 3D Altered Beast by Zach Miller. Really, Sega? Altered Beast? Altered Beast? Go to your room and think about what you did.
Well, they probably took inspiration from Nintendo's 3D Urban Champion.
Yeah, 3D Urban.
Yeah, I don't know what you're going to gain by putting this in 3D, but...
Motion sickness in addition to the normal sickness this game generates.
By the way, there was a guy in high school we used to call Altered Beast because he had a big body and a really small head. But that's another story. It's a story for another time. Editorial. We also have editorial written by our very own James Jones. What to announce when you're announcing. And in the nepotism slot of now playing, and to break up the ocean of Sega ports, James wrote an editorial. An aged monkey wearing a top hat. Surprised? You weren't the only one. Maybe some more surprise in your diet would be good for you. Keep your cholesterol down, kids.
So you can read about the true meaning of Cranky Kong and lots Christmas. Of other things this week and every week over at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Welcome to the Nintendo Helpline, where you're the Nintendo Suicide Prevention Line.
Thank you for choosing the blue pill. Wii U is doing great.
Where only Nintendo kills their consoles.
All right, so we're going to do some new business here. We're going to talk about games. That's one of our favorite things to do on this podcast, and mostly games that we enjoy. And we're going to kick that off with Mr. Jones.
So I'm surprised. I've been poking around other games for a while, but mostly I went through Rayman Legends much more thoroughly than I had as of last week. Last week, I think
I had... A Wii U game that you're enjoying very much.
Well, yes, kind of.
Okay,
kind of.
So, when I spoke about this game a while ago, I think it was off recording, I was like, man, the gamepad stuff looks like fun, and Johnny's... was sort of like, yeah, well, and
it is for a while.
It's not anymore. So I've cleared the game. I haven't gotten enough to unlock the last set of worlds, even though it rolls the credits before then. Mm-hmm. I think I got there like 40 short or something like that, so not that far off. But by the end, I freaking hate the Murphy stages. And it's because Sir Globlox might have a developmental disorder.
Sure. Like,
he will not do what you want him to do at all. He will sit there. I had one where I couldn't beat the stage because he kept flying backwards into the lava. Why? I don't know. He did it like 8 times in a row.
It was just because you weren't fast enough to push back an obstacle or something? Like,
no, I mean, he had a clear... it was one where you have the shield, and he'll jump on the shield and off the shield. And yeah. I had the shield where he's supposed to jump onto it, and he would just not do it, and he'd turn around and fly the other way into the lava.
Like, conceptually, those levels, especially once you have the shield and, you know, you've got things coming down from above and you have to protect him, but then there's a big pit and you have to put it under him so he jumps on top and then he's flying around on it. Conceptually, I think they're awesome.
Right.
But the execution is definitely pretty tricky. And it's easy to see why, because what you're asking that AI to do in those levels
is a lot
more complex than what he's doing in the early levels where he's just basically running.
Right.
You know. You're clearing a path, but basically just going forward. And in these levels, it's more ambiguous what the smartest move might be. And it's those levels where it would be nice to play with another person who could actually directly control him.
I would like to try that because to me, that would make those levels far less infuriating.
So does it feel like the game should, like the release should have been pushed back 7 months to work more on the game? Or
absolutely. That's absolutely what needed to happen. That game should not be out yet. It is not ready.
Okay.
what's frustrating is that I was really looking forward to those stages and ultimately found them to be frustration-generating machines. But the actual platforming stages I found to be really enjoyable. Occasionally, the game's physics engine, as Guillaume alluded to last week, just loses its mind, and Rayman or whoever you're playing as gets slingshotted into space.
Did I say that? Because I haven't played the game yet.
Oh, you pointed out in the challenge app that you have to use the physics sometimes to break the game.
There are tricks.
Occasionally, the broken physics come back to bite you in the ass.
Oh.
And like, you'll be like jumping, oh, how did I end up in space? All right, I'm dead now. That's fun.
I think Rayman Legends is a great game.
It is.
It's one of the best games on Wii U. I mean, no one bought it on Wii U.
Yeah.
No one really bought it, period. They actually just announced that they're going to port it up to PS4 and Xbox One, which seems like a smart thing to do.
But didn't the game sell better on Wii U than the other two platforms? That's what the figures seem to say.
That's like saying you sold better than not selling at all.
Yeah, I mean, how well could it have possibly sold on Wii U? And then subtract something from that, and that's how it sold on those other platforms. So
subtract something from zero.
It was a pretty big disappointment, I think.
That's
to take nothing away from how good it is. It's a fantastic game. I really like Rayman Legends a lot. If you have a Wii U, you should play that game.
I agree.
It's on the Christmas list.
Yeah. I mean, Guillaume, you especially, will love it. You absolutely love it.
Yeah, I'm sure. There was no incentive for me to buy it at launch because I can't remember now. I guess maybe the Wonderful 101 was coming out at the same time. But then, you know, it was so clear that the game had bombed that the $60? I don't think so.
It's going to plummet, right?
So, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I was playing Wonderful 101. So I bought that game, Pikmin and Wonderful 101 together. And I went with, you know, Wonderful 101 first, and not to disparage the game, I think it is truly a unique concept, and I think it's really cool at what it tries to do. I can see how people who really like things like character action games would absolutely adore this game. It just wasn't for me. So when I went to Rayman, it was a nice change of pace.
Sure.
I'm sure I'm going to get hate mail because of this and Zelda, but fuck you. Rayman's
a lot more familiar, you know. It does some interesting things like we just talked about with the Murphy levels and the music levels, I think, are novel. But I think for the most part, Rayman Legends plays like the other games that you've played. I mean, it's easy to pick up. It's easy to appreciate. It's easy to get the appeal. Wonderful 101 is a strange beast. And
it takes,
I think, you know, a fair number of people who bought that game didn't necessarily know what they were getting into.
Oh, I didn't know what I was getting into, and I played the game before.
Yeah.
So what To me, though, one thought I take away from Rayman Legends, I've talked about it on the show, other people have talked about it. I feel a little bit, having played that game, having played a lot of Rayman games in the past, that, A, they should never make another 3D Rayman. Just don't. They certainly shouldn't make Rayman 2 again. Seriously. But I feel like they made a better Sonic game than Sega's ever made in this game.
That is a... Yeah, I agree. That's a great point.
Because that game has speed. I mean, there are... I mean, I don't think the characters play any differently. I'm not 100% sure on that. I think they're just palette swaps.
Yeah, yeah. They're all just cosmetic changes.
But, like, seeing the various princesses shoot across levels just at beyond breakneck speeds, at points where it just feels like it's reckless. And yet, the stages are designed in such a way that it's not. It's not like there's no reason you're going to have to hard stop anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you could just continue pretty close to where you left off makes that kind of speed and that kind of platforming challenge immaterial. It's okay. You can do that. You can be really hard because there's no life limit. It very rarely knocks you back so far you think, this sucks. Occasionally, sure, the game lacks a checkpoint and you end up way far back, but in general, you're pretty close to where you screwed up. The game absolutely thrives on you getting into rhythm. So a lot of those fast stages are about you really starting to feel the rhythm of the stage.
Well, and I think along with that, there are lots of secrets in Rayman Legends, mm-hmm, and in getting the secret areas and finding the really cool hidden things, you don't necessarily feel like that breaks the rhythm.
No.
So it's a are you astute enough to choose the alternate path as you're moving along at this really fast,
right,
speed? If so, you don't have to slow down at all.
No. Nope.
And moreover, if you do choose to slow down, the game doesn't punish you. The controls don't turn to utter shit when you stop running.
Absolutely
full blast
not.
Speed. And so if you want to play at a more methodical pace, you can. In most of the stages, you know, except for the auto-scrolling ones. But for the most part, you can play this game pretty slowly if that's how you prefer to play. And the game doesn't punish you for that, and it still feels like a competent platformer when you do that. And that was always my big problem about Sonic. It's like, you know, I think it's fun to go fast in Sonic, but they put these secret things all over the place, and the only way you're ever going to get them is if you slow down, way down, and play through the game more like a Mario game. And at that point, the controls don't work anymore. And the game is almost functionally broken if you're not running full blast in the 2D Sonic game.
Yeah.
And Rayman totally avoids that problem. And you know, I completely agree with you. It's probably the best 2D Sonic. Probably, well, by default, then it would be probably the best Sonic game ever made.
I would say if you are a Sonic fan and do not own this game, you are failing yourself. Because... Hey, there is a... I know you didn't like the Back to Legends stuff that much, Johnny.
Oh, the Origins levels.
Back to Origins, yeah.
Just because I've played those before.
But see, I've never played Origins. So for me...
They don't add any value to me at all.
For me, this is a absurdist amount of content in this game.
Yeah.
It reminds me of when the second GameCube Rogue Squad game had the first one in there, just for shit.
As a two-player split-screen mode.
It's just like, yeah, we just took the whole first game and just stuck it on there. That's a lot of content in one game, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, mm-hmm, seriously, if you like the 2D Sonics, you really need to get this game. There are like 60 stages or something absurd like that if you include the old stages.
Oh, it's probably closer to 100.
It's nuts.
I think there are 40 stages just from Origins, and I think there are about 60 new levels.
Oh my god!
Wow.
Yeah.
And some of these, like, these remixes
they're not all short either. Some of them are, you know, full-size, big levels.
Mm-hmm. But some of these little short remixes where you have to, like, get to the end in 60 seconds or 40 seconds or whatever, mm-hmm, those are really fun. They're really frustrating. They're infuriating sometimes.
Yeah, I don't like them that much, but they're mostly, I mean, they're more or less optional. So.
Yeah, oh, they're totally optional. But they can be, a lot of times they're about memorizing the game or getting the mechanics really, really down cold. Like, so yep, the only problem I have with the game is that sometimes it just bugs out. And I understand that physics engines can be tricky. And sometimes this game goes, and Rayman gets, you know, catapulted off into the stratosphere. But
That never happened to me.
I had a really good one where he got shot. It was running from dragons, and he got shot back over the dragon, so the dragon didn't hit him. And that was what kills you if you aren't going too fast. It was a scrolling stage. So he just went until the game registered. Yeah, he's not on screen anymore. I think he died. He actually shot over the thing you shouldn't be able to jump over. I was like, all right, game, sure. Have fun. But even if it does that, it sets you back pretty close to where it freaked out. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a really competently put together platformer.
Yeah, well, it's more than competent.
Well, it's a really great game, but it's a deeply well thought out design.
Yeah,
I
think the levels are very, very finely tuned to the weird physics that the character.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like the character moves in an odd way. He's floaty. He's fast, but he's also floaty. He has a lot of momentum.
Yep.
And yet that could be frustrating if the levels weren't tied in with that mode of transportation, but they're very perfectly tuned to the way Rayman controls, and much more so than in Origins. And you've probably heard that from other people.
Yep.
And I absolutely agree. The levels in Origins didn't always feel like they completely matched up in design to the way the character moves. And I think in Legends, they did a much better job of that. And it's part of what makes the game feel like it flows so well.
Oh yeah. I will say something like all the gaps in the game are the exact right length for the jump they want you to perform. So if it's a bunch of short jumps, the light tap on the button, if you just tap in the rhythm, you will always make all of those jumps. You will never go slightly over the edge because it's not quite the right length and fall off the side.
Are you constantly holding down the run button?
I am always holding on the run. Okay. I wish I could just tape it down.
When I run, I
you
always hold
down
the run button.
You don't have to, but
okay.
Yeah.
No, but it's just the first Origins I found benefited greatly when you just stopped running at some points. So I was wondering, like, is this necessary as well?
Oh, it's not necessary. I just love to run. I think it's great.
No, I mean, it was necessary to let go of it, because otherwise Rayman would just overshoot the target so wildly.
Right. That was part of the problem in Origins, is that they sometimes asked for precision that the controls weren't necessarily tuned to provide. And they don't make that mistake in Legends.
No, I think the game provides the precision for you. You just have to know, like, which of the three ways you want to jump is the correct one.
Yeah, it ultimately feels more like
a rhythm game.
Runner game. It feels, yeah, more like a rhythm game. It feels like it's not so much about reacting to the environment. And I don't know how to explain this well, but because of the momentum and the way the physics are done and the way that the gaps are all set up, I think it has as much in common with Runner 2 as it does with a Mario game.
So, and there's a lot of parallels there, not least of which is when you go down in a Runner game, you're brought back relatively close to where you went down, except in some of the later original Runner stages where the game's just really long.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, you're sort of bounced back to where, close to where you start. You know, there's no real punishment for death except having to replay the areas you'd already cleared.
There's no big loading screen or anything like that.
A lot of it's just sort of learning the level and learning the button press rhythms. I think it's a much more complicated game than the Runner games, just because of the nature of the jumping.
The mechanics are deeper.
Right, but there's a lot in common there. The music stages actually are a really big giveaway that they designed this game kind of like a rhythm game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the game.
Well, then, and the funny thing is, the rhythm stages don't feel that much different from the other stages.
No, only the first one really feels that tied into the rhythm, to the music.
Yeah, I mean, the presentation is somewhat different, and the music stands out more in those levels, because it is this weird remix of some popular song that you know.
Yeah.
But the actual gameplay in those levels is not drastically different than what you're doing in any
fast.
Other level.
That's the only thing that's different. It is fast by force. You have to be
quick. You're basically not allowed to slow down in those levels. But most levels, you wouldn't want to slow down anyway. So it's very consistent.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
It's
so,
a cool game.
So I'll go next. And I've also been playing a Wii U game that I also enjoy. And that would be Wii Fit U.
No, seriously, guys. I swear. I like the Wii U.
Guys, Wii's great. We love the Wii U.
You're just saying that because it's dying.
The issue is not whether I like it. That's not the problem here. I do enjoy Wii Fit U. A game who's the I have no idea what Nintendo plans to do with Wii Fit U. I think economically their rollout of it is bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea where this is going or whether they intend to sell this at some point, and whether they think that they're setting it up for success with this kind of weird trial version thing, giving it away if you buy a Fit Meter. I don't know, but I went out and bought a balance board for this game, and I went out and bought a Fit Meter for this game. So I spent $40 on it, and even then, I think it's been a good value for me. I actually really like it. I think it's something I'm going to be able to use for a long time to come. And it's good timing for me. You know, it gets really cold here in the winter, and with the flood situation this year, I don't have a ski pass this winter.
Oh.
So winter exercise is actually a going concern for me. And especially the past couple of weeks, it's been like negative Fahrenheit temperatures in Colorado. And I'm not that much of an outdoors person in the first place, but like you can barely walk out to like go get a burger in this weather. So having, a built-in virtual trainer and all these exercises at the touch of my fingers on Wii Fit U has been a godsend. And I've really enjoyed it. I've really appreciated it. The new activities, all the ones I've tried, I pretty much like all of them. I think some of them are really well thought out. They do some interesting things with the gamepad, actually. And I think as a tech demo for what the gamepad can do and some interesting new ways to use it, this is probably as good as Nintendo Land in some respects. I think the underwater diving, or they call it orienteering, is that what it's called?
Oh, that's a different game. Orienteering is when you kind of run in place and you try to find people in on Woo Island, and then there's a deep diving. Yeah, they're basically the same thing. Yeah.
I see. Well, I haven't actually tried the orienteering yet, but the diving game is really fun. It actually reminds me a lot of Endless Ocean, and it has a lot of the same appeal. It's a little more limited, and it's a little more cartoony, obviously, but it's the same basic appeal. They throw you in this big region of the ocean. It's full of fish and interesting sea creatures and little coins and treasures for you to go find in the kelp and the seaweed down on the bottom, and you know, rock structures with arches for you to swim through, and it rewards you for exploring and for finding this stuff. And you may not even remember that you're actually exercising as you do this, because the things that they populate the world with are interesting and you want to go find that stuff. And if you have to step on the balance board a lot or do some squats to boost forward so you can catch the dolphin, that's just how you play the game. It doesn't feel like you're exercising.
And there's a lot, you know, like there's some Endless Ocean DNA. There's also some rock and roll climbing DNA in there. There's a wall climbing game. There's some, Wii Sports in there with the squash. So
The squash is neat. They call it puzzle squash because you're batting this ball up against the wall, and the wall on the opposite side is made up of different colored blocks. I'll be damned if I can figure out what the puzzle actually is here. I mean, all I'm doing is hitting the ball every time. You know, it's clever in that, unlike Wii Sports Tennis, it makes you actually walk on the balance board to make your character run over to the correct spot where you should stand for where the ball's coming in. So it doesn't really take any thinking, but at least you have to move your body a little bit more in order to play the game.
Yeah.
And then you swing a Wii remote just like in tennis, but am I supposed to be aiming for a certain color here? Are they worth different values? The game doesn't explain anything to you.
No,
so.
Right. What you're supposed to do is try to get rid of all the colors but one. And if you've got a full wall of, you know, one full color, then you get a lot more points once you hit that wall.
Okay.
So, there is some puzzling to that. Like, it just makes you... like, you have to be able to control the ball, you know, and it's all timing-based, just like the original Wii Sports.
Timing and also angle, you know, it's using the Motion Plus, so it cares about how you swing the racket.
But mostly
and,
timing.
It's engaging, it's entertaining, and it's kind of a neat little thing. The trampoline game is repetitive but kind of exciting as you launch yourself like 2,000 feet into the air and you soar over the top of a blimp. And your character starts doing backflips while fireworks go off in the distance because people are so amazed at your jumping ability.
Sounds pretty epic.
It takes you freaking like 30 seconds to get back down to Earth. It's
yeah.
It would be scary if it weren't just amazing.
Yeah. You know, there's a fun kind of Mario Sunshine kind of mini game where you're stepping on the balance board and using it as a foot pedal for this water cannon. And people are like throwing mud balls at you, and they're rushing at you like mud zombies, and you have to blast them before they get to you. And you're moving the gamepad around as kind of an aiming device. And it's, so it's motion control, but also the balance board. And combining motion control with the balance board is something that I feel like this game does a lot more than Wii Fit or Wii Fit Plus did. And I think it works really well. You know, there's a fun little mini game where you're delivering desserts to people who are standing around this party or a restaurant, and you have to go to the corners and pick up a dessert, and you're holding the gamepad like a tray in front of you. And on the screen, you see the dessert is on the character's tray, and you have to walk or run over to the characters who are demanding a certain dessert. And you have to balance the dessert on the tray all the way over there. And it's really hard to do because they actually don't seem to believe in serving desserts on plates or in cups or anything. So a lot of the things that they give you, they just plop this big, like, pumpkin roll looking thing, and they just put it directly on the tray. And so of course it rolls all over the place because it's round, and it's very hard to keep your balance while also focusing on moving your feet so you actually make progress and you get closer to the person who needs it. That it's very challenging, and it's fun, and it's not something I've done before. And I really like that. I think it's very inventive, and I'm impressed at the number of ideas that they have in here and how entertaining some of them are. And I'm also disappointed that so many of the new experiences require two Wii remotes, which I don't have right now. And I think you should be aware of that going in, that all of the dancing games, which is a whole category, like between aerobics and balance games, you now have dancing, and you can't do any of them unless you have two Wii remotes. And the mountain climbing thing that Guillaume mentioned earlier, you have to have two Wii remotes for that. So there's a fair bit of the game that I still, even with all this hardware, I mean, I bought a fit meter, I bought a balance board, I have a gamepad, I have a Wii remote, and still that's not enough hardware to do all the different activities in this game. It's kind of ridiculous, but I still kind of want to get another Wii remote so I can do that stuff.
As you said a little bit earlier, the mini games are just so much stronger this time, and I end up playing the ones that I wasn't even playing on Wii Fit Plus, like the chicken one. I really want a chicken suit for my Mii. You wouldn't believe. And
I've always enjoyed the chicken flying game. My mom and dad actually really liked that one too. Yeah. So. We've played a lot of that one.
Yeah, and it might, you know, at the risk of sounding completely insane, Wii Fit U is one of the reasons why I'm well, what was it you said again? I'm living in fantasy land? because I already have, like, one reason to turn on my Wii U pretty much every day. And that's kind of all I need in some ways. Not really, but you know what I mean. Like, I'm going to be playing it.
You
for
can
a long
survive,
time.
Buddy. You're a survivor, ultimately, Gio.
Yeah. Well, you know, all the genres that I've loved have died at some point, and so I'm kind of used to it. I love point and click adventure games, and they went away for a long time, and computer RPGs, and they went away for a long time, and
2D fighting games.
Not so much, but you know, like space dogfighting games. You don't see those every day. So yeah, whatever.
Well, anyway, Wii Fit U is surprisingly very impressive. A very solid package. I think it, you know, it may not be like my dream fitness game, but it's way more comprehensive and way more useful as a trainer than either of the previous Wii Fit games. There's actually a really nice feature where you can tell the game how much time you have to work out or how many calories you would like to burn, and it will create a workout for you that meets those objectives. And it will populate it with basically random events that just all kind of add up to whatever your goal is. And if you see an event in there that you don't like, or in my case, that requires a controller that you don't have, you just hit shuffle and it'll redo the whole thing and totally mix up all different ones. You can create three different personal routines for yourself of, I think, indefinite length. I think you can put pretty much as many activities as you want or as few, and you can save those. So I have a set of my favorite yoga, And if I feel like doing yoga and I want kind of an easier, more relaxing experience that particular day, I'll play that one. I have another one that's all aerobic stuff and it's supposed to get my heart rate up and it's about 20 minutes long. And, you know, so depending on what I'm in the mood for, what I have time for, they give you the tools finally. They give you the tools to really make this your workout game. And it doesn't feel like you're just stringing from one manual selected activity to the next. They even do this thing, and this is subtle, but it's very effective. When you finish an activity, if you just go to, you know, select activity and you're just picking from the list, I feel like doing obstacle course. When you finish that, they will suggest two different activities to follow up. And it's very, very easy to say, you know what? I could do one more, especially if it's the advanced version of what I just did, or it's another activity that's a little bit different, but kind of related. That stuff is great, you know, and that's really what WeFit should be about. It's about getting you to exercise more. And when you're in the ecosystem, like I've already taken the time to turn on my Wii U, to boot up this game, to import my FitMeter data into the thing, to choose my profile, to do the, you know, the balance test or the body test or whatever. I'm already in this. So make it easy and smooth for me to keep working out. And they do that so much better in this game than they have in the past. And it's very, very solid. It's a really nice workout game and it's fun and it's cute. One thing I want to note, a couple things. The community feature, great in concept. I don't know that the execution really does what it should.
I have no idea what it does. I have no idea if there is any logic to that thing, because some days, you know, like we're 100% males apparently in the club, except that my girlfriend joined, and some days it recognizes her as she's playing and some days it doesn't. And it's supposed to show you who met their goals recently, but never seems to. There's just no rhyme or reason. Sometimes you'll see the community is entirely populated with tons of people, and sometimes there's absolutely no one but you and the creator of the community, and it's just super awkward.
I don't see the problem.
I think it's a little bit broken right now.
I think you need to look on the positive side. It's not that you're not seeing people, it's that you're seeing the entirety of the Wii U owner base.
No.
I saw that one coming.
Look.
Thank you, John.
I got
it's an
you,
NWR readership community, so it's the entirety of our readership.
The entirety of our readership.
It's pretty much the same thing at this point.
Yeah. Clearly, there are not many people playing this game yet, but it also hasn't really been released yet. So I have a feeling that by the time they actually...
Maybe that's their excuse for Wii U. We haven't really released it yet.
I have a feeling that by the time Nintendo formally releases Wii Fit U on the market and they sell it with brand new balance boards and all that jazz, they will probably go and do a patch that improves some things like the community feature in particular, because it is kind of a mess right now. But I like the idea, and I think the intent is good, and I think they just need to polish it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's really impressive stuff, and I think this is by far the best Wii Fit game that they've done. You know, if you enjoy the other ones, I think you should definitely give this a shot.
But do you get to?
I bet you'll enjoy it.
Do you get to be John's spirit animal and flap like a chicken?
Only Johnny Metz gets to be that man.
No, but I will say, I wanted to, actually, that was the other point I wanted to make. If you have a few or maybe a lot of Nintendo Network friends on your Wii U system, it's worth going through the list, and you can do this in, I think, in Miiverse, or maybe you go to the friends list. I don't remember how their crazy interface works. But you go down the list of your friends on Wii U, and if you click on each one, there's a button that says, like, import their Mii. And it'll save the Mii from their profile onto your system. And that way, they will start to appear in your games. Oh. And there haven't really been very many Wii U games so far that use Miis. But Wii Fit U does. And it really does make these little mini games and activities more fun when I see James and Guillaume and Greg and John and Neil and all these other people show up in these activities. Even though they don't even have Wii Fit.
I'm not going to stand for it.
I you know, see, like, my parents, my sister, my brother. It's hilarious. They're just, you know, cheering you on or being in your way. And
or you're delivering. Like, I was delivering desserts to TYP the other day. And, you know, that's It's like a minor thing, but it's fun. It's but worth that's spending exactly 5 minutes was, to...
That's exactly what I was talking about when I was saying that Miis are fantastic. You know, it's one of the things I like most about Nintendo games right now, and it's entirely because of that.
Yeah, well, I'm not putting as much emphasis on it as you are, but I do appreciate it, and I do like it. I didn't even know that feature was there. I just actually kind of accidentally stumbled upon it. I was like, oh, wow, you can save their Mii just because we're friends. You know, they don't have to send it to me like you did on the original Wii. You can just import it. And it's very quick, and it doesn't take that long to go through the list and add a whole bunch of Miis to your system. And then it really does make a difference in the presentation of a game like this. So I'd recommend that you do that. And if you do pick it up, be sure to join the NWR community, the Fit Club. There's a forum thread on our site where you can get the password to do that and all the information about how to set that up. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes for this episode. So if you do end up picking up Wii Fit U, I would definitely recommend that you do that. And
NWR Fat Camp.
Well, maybe at some point the Fit Club will be worthwhile. Right now, it seems like kind of a conceptual experiment, but at some point, I could see it being a really nice feature. And with that, I will throw it to John Lindemann.
I picked up 3D Space Harrier for 3DS.
You! You're responsible!
Responsible for what?
Hey, what? You think there's some vast conspiracy that I'm a part of, James?
Yeah. Yep. You're the one telling Sega, yes, your games were good back then.
Oh, hey, wait a minute, buddy. You could talk about a lot of games like that, but not Space Harrier, my friend. Space Harrier and I have a history. A long history that I'm about to enlighten you on.
Oh,
way
God.
Back in the day, in 1985, when I was just a young buck.
When I was -1.
When you were just a twinkle, well, I don't know what you were, in somebody's eye, but somebody's eye had something about James Jones in it. Probably a tear, or perhaps some dust. But when I was vacationing down in Florida with my family, there used to be a KOA, Campgrounds of America, if it hasn't gone out of business already. But, you know, we had a travel trailer, and we would go from campground to campground in Florida, much like vagabonds. There was this one campground that we...
Canadian snowbirds down in Florida.
Yep. That we went
John Linden, Romany.
Every year we would typically go to this. It became a kind of our spot after a while, after a couple of years. But it had, like, this sort of boathouse. They had, like, paddle boats and stuff, so they had this sort of boathouse. But they actually turned it into an arcade. So it was really cool, and the thing is, it was always empty, so I could just play any game in it. And there were two games in there. They had Space Harrier, and they had Quartet, which is another probably Sega game from the same period, 85, 86. Anyways, both those games, loved it. Like, you would walk in there, and they had them on all day and night, and they were turned up really, really loud. And so you would hear their attract music as just walking by. So, you know, I loved playing Space Harrier. And so, you know, this was... An easy purchase for me. I mean, even though it's $6 on the eShop, which normally I would kind of balk at, but it's Space Harrier, man. I mean, you know, I love the music. I love the design of the characters. Really what they were doing with sprites way back then. I mean, this game's almost 30 years old. So what they were doing with sprites back then was really, really crazy and really impressive. And I got to say, I'm really impressed. I've played this on several other platforms, and I think that the 3DS version of it, this 3D version of it, is really, really good. I mean, I think the 3D effect is perfect for this game. I mean, it doesn't distract from it at all. In fact, it makes what they were already doing with sort of this faux 3D with the sprites coming in.
Yeah.
I think it makes it look even better. And, you know, they've also done enough kind of gimmicky sort of stuff with it to make it interesting, but they haven't gone overboard with it. I know I've played some of I remember on DS I played the Konami, one of their games where they had all their old arcade games compiled onto a cart, and it was just, they just went totally overboard. You know, where you can look at the circuit board for the game and change jumpers, which is just completely ridiculous.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's just silly. I mean, it's just stuff that, you know, you don't. It's useless, but there's a couple of things you can do with this. You can, for some reason, they have it so that, and I don't know if this is what Guillaume was talking about with regards to 3D Hang-On, what you can do in it. But I think that they're kind of trying. I never saw the sit-down version of Space Harrier, but I'm assuming it probably maybe rocked back and forth.
Yeah.
So they try to kind of do that with 3DS, where you can turn on, like, I think it's like arcade cabinet tilting, and you see
like the bezel of the arcade screen just moving around left and right,
which is great for 3D effects.
Yeah, it
because
goes
that
back
really
and
helps
forth.
You keep the 3D effects centered.
Yeah, I mean it's weird. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. But what is kind of neat is you can have the arcade cabinet sound effects. So of course in this game you're always pounding the fire button, you know, because I mean that's all you do. It's a shooter, right? Sort of like Sin and Punishment style. And it has that kind of there's a very specific sound that those old arcade cabinets, their buttons had a very kind of like a clack 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 sound. And so and so it has that. And so it's kind of cool.
The guys who developed this port are just crazy. M2, they went and you can bet that they recorded the actual sound on an actual Space Harrier machine.
Yeah.
You know, like recording the sound of a button for a different game. Are you crazy? No, it has to be a Space Harrier machine.
Yeah. And it's a nice little touch. It's not something I would have thought of, but I was like, at first I was like, who wants to hear the, what is this, you know, arcade cabinet sounds? What the heck is that going to be? And I'm like, that's kind of neat. It's kind of a cool idea. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of other stuff you can do. I mean, you can save your game. It saves a replay of each one of your games, which is kind of cool. I think you can, I mean, you can insert coins. Like you have to like insert coins. Like you press Y to insert coins to start the game. But I think you can only continue. I think you can only add a certain number of coins. You can only continue, I think, three or four times.
Right. But then you can select your starting level.
Correct. So. Yep. You can select any stage you want. But see, I like that though, because it kind of prevents you from sort of burning out. It almost forces you to play through the game the way it's intended to be played through, you know, which is fine. Because I mean, really, if you just want to play through the game, I mean, you can get it. You can emulate this game, you know, in 15 different ways. You can play it on PC or whatever. So it's just cool that it kind of forces you to actually sit there and play the game the way it's meant to be played.
A little pro tip, if you can finish the last level using only without losing a life, you're going to fight a special boss that was only on the what was the 8-bit Sega system?
Master System.
That was only in the Master System version of the game.
Cool.
The Sega Master System, the most unironically named but completely inappropriate name system ever.
I really like it. I mean, I think it's really good. I mean, if you like Space Harrier, I mean, I'm just a Space Harrier geek pretty much. But, I mean, I'm really enjoying it. And I would probably be the harshest critic on this game compared to people that really don't care that much either way. But this, to me, it feels like the original arcade game, which impresses me because usually when I play this game, you know, on other platforms, I don't get that feeling. So.
Right. Yeah, I've never touched the arcade cabinet, but the this port... I've played other ports, but this port was, you know, got closer to make me understand what's so awesome about this game. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I still think it's a little bit simplistic. It's very, I don't know, like, I don't really like the physics of it. I feel like your character moving around doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. But with the 3D and all the little niceties that the team put around this game, I found it more enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, part of it has a very unique feel. You almost have to. The only thing I struggled with a bit was sort of you kind of have to. It's kind of hard to keep your character in one place for any one time.
Oh yeah,
you know? Because a lot of times you wish you could sort of hold your character in one place so you could shoot a boss because you know the bosses come towards you, and of course you have to move to dodge all of the, you know their fireballs, but you know it would be nice to kind of sit there in one place and quickly you know gun them right in the face because you're shooting them in the head, so you know, but that's the way the arcade game feels, so it's good. I really enjoyed it.
I've heard a lot of good things about it, and actually was recording a music podcast with Mike Sklens, co-founder of this podcast, last night, and he told me he had just picked it up and he was really enjoying it as well, and I think he had very very little previous experience with Space Harrier, and he was like, yeah, it's great. It's like really perfect match with the 3D effect, and it actually makes the game work better. I think he told me he'd actually had difficulty playing the original version because it was difficult to judge that distance mm-hmm. as things come out of the perspective and towards the screen and towards your character. Yep. And he felt that the 3D effect actually made the game easier to play and it made more sense that way.
Yeah, yeah. It improves the game quite a bit. So
it makes a lot more sense than 3D Sonic.
Yeah. And also fantastic soundtrack too. I absolutely love the music. Some of my favorite music ever.
Very nice. All right, so why don't we move on to Guillaume?
Yeah, well, I've also been playing Sega 3D Classics.
As John totally ruined the surprise on in the last segment.
Yeah, well, I've played a little bit of Super Hang-On, 3D Super Hang-On. I accepted the review for it because I had read another review which was so elogious about the experience of playing Super Hang-On on 3DS that I was like, okay, I kind of want to try this. And you know what? The experience itself is actually pretty impressive. Super Hang-On is just this motorbike racing game. It's very simplistic. It's not, you know, it's kind of like a Mode 7 type of game, except more advanced than that, because there's actual, like, shifts in elevation a little bit. But, it's not actually 3D. It's kind of a trick, right? It's just these sprites that are coming at you in a certain way that they emulate, 3D movement, I suppose. But yeah, so on the 3DS, the developer, M2, decided to, use everything that they possibly could to try to recreate the experience of playing the actual game, which had you sit on a tiny, motorbike. Well, not tiny, actually. It was pretty big. It was a big arcade cabinet.
It was like those things in the front of grocery stores that you put in a nickel and it kind of shakes.
Except they were bigger.
Yeah, bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, so this starts with Hang-On, which is Yu Suzuki's debut game. And then they guess, well, that was hugely successful, so let's make it even bigger.
Right.
And then Super Hang-On, I think, was the first one that had like four in tandem or something like that. It's weird.
And so you're controlling your bike by actually shifting this huge bike left and right. Like, you're shifting your weight, and that's how you control the bike in the game. So it's pretty elaborate, and you can't really reproduce that just with a D-pad or just with an analog stick. So they use the gyroscopes of the 3DS to have you control the bike, and it actually works surprisingly well. I found that for short periods of time I was preferring the motion controls to the circle pad, just because making some of the more minute course corrections, like trying to take turns a little bit less abruptly, was much, much easier with motion controls.
Does that break the 3D effect, though?
It absolutely does, and that's what's unfortunate. Unless you're going to be tilting your head at the same time as you're going to be tilting the 3DS. I don't recommend that. It doesn't sound healthy. You're probably going to hurt yourself.
You're probably going to throw up.
And
it's also fairly embarrassing on the train.
Absolutely. For short periods of time, it's a good control scheme. But then fatigue sets in. It's actually, like you're holding your 3DS in front of you, and it's just... For longer periods,
you kind of look like
just
a cat sitting in front of a grandfather clock.
Sure.
It's quite elaborate.
So after a while, I referred it back to the circle pad, and then the game was not nearly as enjoyable. But it had all those other things that John mentioned, like you can see the bezel of the arcade cabinet, and it's pretty cool. But in the end, I found that the game didn't really deserve the amount of care that was put into this port. I don't think it's too simplistic, and no one's going to be really playing this when they could be playing some other racing game, any other racing game on the 3DS.
Well, not the ones that came out at launch.
But on the other hand...
Ridge Racer!
On the other hand, I've been playing also Galaxy Force 2, which I knew nothing about. And it's another, 3D port of a Sega arcade game. It also was using the kind of the afterburner setup where, you sit down in this thing and it just turns around as you play, and it obviously the 3DS can't replicate that, but they do try to reproduce this experience again by showing you not only the arcade cabinet that you're virtually sitting in, but then you can choose, like, you can see the background in the back, and you can choose between space or between an arcade. So you see, you know, like, other machines, usually Sega ones. but yeah, so Galaxy Force, I had not heard of this game at all before, and I was looking at screenshots, and it looked incredible. It looked like, you know, a space shooter, type of game that I'm really into. And, it's, you know, it's very much an arcade game. It's very much you are on a set path, and, so you can't really deviate. You know, it's not a dogfighting game. It's not Rogue Squadron. It's not anything like that. It's more of a Star Fox. But you have more freedom than you do in Star Fox. And unlike Star Fox, this game doesn't use polygons. It uses sprites. Mm-hmm. The most detailed sprites and that you've ever seen, with, like, crazy scaling. And I don't know. Like, it's exactly like Space Harrier, what Space Harrier does, but with way more horsepower behind it. It's incredible visually. And I don't see a reason to go back to 3D Space Harrier after playing this. Like, this is amazing. It just blows my mind. And you can read the interviews with the developer. They went and recreated the sprites so that they wouldn't be all pixelated when they're up in your face. They're 4 times the resolution of the what they were in the arcade game. And you can see, like, they weren't even sure they could get the arcade game working. You know, like, just emulating it, they were like, are you crazy? This is, you know, like, 1.5 times as more, like, there's an extra processor that Space Harrier didn't have, and we had trouble emulating Space Harrier. And so not only they did that, but they recreated, you know, that virtual arcade cabinet, and they put a background, and they increased the resolution of the sprites, so it's just, it's amazing, and it's way less simplistic than something like Space Super Hang-On or Space Harrier, and I'm really, really enjoying it.
Wow.
I'll have to pick that up.
That might be the one that I get.
Yeah. Sounds awesome. It instantly makes Space Harrier obsolete.
How much was it, out of curiosity?
It was the same price as the other ones. It was, $6? $5.99?
That's...
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Awesome.
So I definitely recommend it.
That sounds great.
There's going to be a review coming up at some point when I get around to writing it.
All right. Well, I'll talk about one more game before we wrap up new business and get a couple of quick listener mail before the end of the show. I want to talk about Knack. And Knack is a game where it's hard to even talk about this PS4 launch title without kind of addressing the weird critical reaction to it and backlash. You know, Knack is a very simple, basic game. It's a brawler. I mean, it's like a Double Dragon in terms of complexity and depth. You know, there's not that much to it. You jump, you punch, there's a jumping attack that's not very good, and mostly you run around and punch things. You can dodge, but dodging is difficult. It's not super effective. You can use it in certain situations, but it's definitely not a get-out-of-jail-free card. And the game mostly rewards you for being hyper-aggressive and running right up to enemies and punching them before they get off their attack animation. I mean, it's stupid. It's a big, dumb, stupid game, and it's actually kind of fun. And that's the part that I don't know that story is getting told enough, because the reviewers for this game, I really can't understand how this game got really just, you know, trashed.
Yeah, pretty much just got crushed by critics. Really.
Yeah, and you know, playing it, I understand that, because it is a very simple game. If your goal is to get to the end as quickly as possible so you can write the review before launch day, this game would be torture. This is not a game that anyone should be playing for 4 hours, 6 hours at a time. There's not enough to it for that. I mean, it's very arcadey. It's meant to be, you know, sit down, play it for maybe an hour, and then take a break. You know, you don't need to be playing Knack all night long. There's not that much to it. But while you're playing it in these short bursts, I think it's mostly very entertaining. It's definitely challenging, which you might not expect. And for me, the biggest appeal of it is definitely not the gameplay. Like I said, it's very simplistic. It's sort of, it's satisfying in a way because Knack is so powerful and he's very like a lumbering kind of character. He just kind of stomps around like Godzilla and or King Kong, and he just punches things that are in a lot of cases bigger than he is. And it looks cool when things break in this game, and a lot of it is just going around breaking walls, breaking things in the environment, breaking dudes. And, you know, it's just a big, dumb action game. It's very simple. But for me, a lot of the appeal actually came from the world and the story. And I'm surprised that this game isn't getting more credit for those aspects of it, because I think it tells an interesting story. It's not The Last of Us, you know, it's not going to win any awards for like the best plot or the best characters, but it is cartoony in kind of like a Pixar way, or maybe DreamWorks is a better comparison there. But, you know, it has a kind of a nice style to it. And the characters all, you know, they are kind of cartoonish. They're kind of from like a kid's animated movie, but the world that they're placed in is very original. And that's one of my favorite things about it. So this game actually was not only directed, but also apparently written by Mark Cerny, according to the end credits that I saw the other night. And I have to give him some credit, maybe not for the dialogue, you know, that you see in these cutscenes that they show, maybe not for these, you know, the really in-depth characters, but I like the background that's set up for Knack. The game takes place in a world where, the people have discovered these relics underground. They just were, you know, digging in the ground. They found these relics, and they're basically like little knickknacks. They're like little triangles and cubes and spheres about maybe the size of a golf ball. Some of them are a little bit bigger than that. And they possess some kind of unknown, mysterious energy. And they, before long, they start using these to power their cars and their houses, and their whole civilization sort of becomes entrenched in these relics that they don't really understand. And there's, of course, this, you know, kind of research culture around finding the relics, understanding how they work, where did they come from, what do they really mean, what do they really do, who put them there. And that's where the story kind of starts. You play as this character, Knack, who is a sentient collection of relics. And the basic mechanic of the game is you go around, and as you punch things and break walls and break boxes in the environment, you find more relics. And because they're everywhere throughout the world, like I said, they're just integrated into society at this point. And as you find these relics all over the place, they get added to your body, they make you bigger and more powerful, and they increase your health bar, and they refill your health at the same time. And the really fun part about that is that as Knack gets bigger and smaller, it's not just a scale thing. It's not just size changing. The actual design of the character changes. The complexity of the features on his face and in his sort of not really clothing, but what eventually starts to look like clothing. All of this develops and evolves as he gets bigger and bigger. And by the end of the game, when you're the size of a mountain, and you're stomping around, busting like giant golems who are now no taller than your knees, Knack has become so detailed that in the cutscenes, when the camera really zooms in, you can see he has like a beard and like a little skirt and like a belt made of relics. All of this, he has like horns and almost like dreadlocks, or kind of like this really cool like purple hair kind of going on his head. It's like none of this is on the original character when he's small. So it's just it's a game where the character, although the gameplay never really evolves much at all from the very beginning of the game, you're pretty much doing the same stuff at the very end. You know, the combos are the same. The enemy patterns are not much different. It's very basic, like I said. But it's really cool to see this character change so much over the course of the game. And he gets bigger and then he gets smaller. But there's always a sense that Knack himself is changing as you play the game. And it's just a really great graphical effect, and it's a really great artistic effect. And it gave me something to stay interested in, along with the story. And
right,
you know,
well, it probably made you want to not get hit even more than, you know, just the fear of getting game over would have, right? Like, you want to see the ultimate version of the game, of the character.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, because when you get hit, it knocks relics off of the character, and he loses that detail, and he gets smaller. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. So, you know, it's not an earth-shattering game, not a game that people are going to be talking about 5 years from now. But I think it's a lot better than people are giving it credit for. I was very entertained by it. And you know, there are parts that I think are very frustrating, and there are parts that are maybe not designed so well that I just kind of had to power on through. But for the most part, I enjoyed it. And it was particularly a very good game to do streaming on from the PS4 because it is so simple. It doesn't take a whole lot of brain power to play through Knack. It's mostly just kind of reflexes. Knack
is a game for idiots, Johnny Metz.
It's more reflexive, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have to think about it very much. It's a real dumb game.
But now, would you say it's a game? Would you say it's aimed at kids?
I don't know. I mean, the design of it is very kid.
Yeah.
It's very kid friendly, the design, the art design, the character design, mm-hmm. but the game itself is very difficult. So
Yeah. Maybe,
I don't know. I mean, it's about as complex as a Lego game, but it's way harder than any Lego game. So if you find that Lego games are boring mainly because they are so easy, then I'd say give Knack a try because it definitely deals with that problem and it has a lot of the same appeal, you know, a lot of the same charm and visual appeal of a Lego game, except with all new characters. And again, the story as it plays out, the plot doesn't take a whole lot of like super interesting twists or anything, but the setting I found really legitimately interesting. And when they go underground into these ruins where people have been mining relics, and then you find like a secret door and you end up in this whole branch of it that's like untouched by human hands and it's full of all kinds of crazy relics, and that gets really big, and you find these mysterious like robot orbs that shoot lasers at you. It's exciting. It's like, it's a really cool place, and Knack is full of things like that. So, I actually like it quite a bit. Now that I've beaten it, I'll probably never play it again. You know, I don't think there's really much replay to it. While it lasted, you know, for the 10 hours or so that it took to get through it, I thought it was pretty good.
Do you think it kind of served a purpose as a showcase for the PS4, or like what kind of niche do you think it occupies?
Yeah, sort of, you know, I think it is that kind of game. And it is a nice tech demo for sure. Like it does things with particle effects and with animation, especially animating a character who's made up of all these little pieces. When you see the shadows underneath Knack, and you see that the shadows also are made up of the projections of all these tiny hundreds and maybe thousands of tiny little pieces that make up this character, it's very impressive. It's really cool. He doesn't quite look like any other character I've ever seen, except maybe like Vector Man on Genesis, except now made of polygons.
That's really cool.
It's a very cool effect. Yeah.
So
you
seem to be impressed by the world. I don't know, like you're not a fan of Ratchet and Clank, so what does this game have? Like they seem to be going for kind of the same thing a little bit, like the same kind of humor and the, you know, a character platformer. So what is it that Knack has?
The loss of the sarcastic sidekick?
Well, that would help, yeah. But
yeah, I mean, Knack is a lot more straightforward with its writing and sense of humor, I guess. But for me, Ratchet & Clank is just not a very good third-person shooter. I don't like the mechanics very much. And Knack is even less complex than Ratchet and Clank in terms of the mechanics, but I think the mechanics that they have work pretty well, and they're satisfying, and they don't get in the way. They don't try to impress me with, you know, menus full of weapons and things like that. I think this, it's a legitimate comparison. I also think the platforming in Knack is, it's probably shouldn't even be called platforming. It's so simple. I mean, comparing this game to like Mario 3D World is a joke. They play nothing alike. Absolutely nothing. Knack is all combat. It's all three button combos. It really is more of a Lego game. I think it does what it sets out to do pretty well. And, you know, if you end up with a copy of this for Christmas, from someone who doesn't really know what it is, you don't need to be worried about it. I'd say play through it, and then when you're finished, take it to GameStop or whatever you do with your old games. It's not one that you need to keep around, but it's fine. It's good.
I mail them to Kazurai.
All right, so I think we've got time for maybe one letter on listener mail, and then we'll have a few more next week. And James, why don't you read this one?
Travis in LA writes, In a sad turn for the year of Luigi, Danny Wells, who played Luigi in the Super Mario Bros. Super Show, passed away on November 28th. I hadn't heard much press about this, so I thought I would forward the news to you, so we can pay the man a little respect. He wasn't as big a name as Captain Lou, but he was twice the dancer. Just watch the beginning sequence of the show.
Well, that's for sure. So, a lot of respect to Mr. Wells. A lot of good childhood memories of watching the show on weekday mornings.
Dope raps on the opening of that show, by the way. Dope.
So you guys watched the Super Show as kids?
Hell yes. Yes.
It was, yeah, for me, I was a bit too old for it, you know.
So you were more than like three?
Yeah, seriously, when was that? I'm trying to think. I was probably
I caught it in syndication.
Maybe?
So it's when I was seeing it, it was already on, you know, second, third run.
Mm-hmm. Like, I had moved past. By the time that show came on, I had already moved past the point where I just could not handle those stupid cartoons anymore of that type. Like, I knew, like, I was like, wow, this is really dumb.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's Deke. That's what they did.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing was very low budget.
Even
as a kid, I could tell that. It looked like kind of a ripoff of Mario. Mm-hmm. You know, like it looked like someone making a Mario show who didn't actually know much about Mario.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, this was in like the late 80s. Mario wasn't as well defined as a universe,
right,
or even,
I mean,
as
he
a
was
character
like
back then. He was much
pixels.
More open to interpretation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The idea of, you know, of these kind of older gentlemen playing Mario and Luigi, and they're just kind of running around in a like a crappy set that looks like an apartment, you know, in Brooklyn or whatever. It kind of worked. I mean, I'll say that the live action part of the show is probably higher quality than the cartoon part of it. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it was very kid friendly humor, a lot of pratfalls, a lot of physical comedy, puns,
type stuff.
Oh yeah, that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah,
and you know, it was fun. I mean, this was in the era of like Pee-wee's Playhouse, which was a lot of the same kind of goofiness. Maybe I think Pee-wee's probably a little more self aware and a little more ironic and a little more intentionally psychedelic.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were along the same lines, I think.
It's a pretty surreal show to go back and watch now, though.
Oh, yeah. It's entertaining in its own way, you know?
Not in the way it was when you watched it the first time, though. It's a completely different sort of, like, what in the world?
Yeah.
It's a much better experience than going back and watching the Zelda stuff that was sometimes interspersed in there, mm-hmm. which just comes off as terrible.
Wait, so there was Zelda stuff interspersed in it? I never understood
it
because
only the cartoon was Zelda.
Mother Brain was also in there, and I remember she had a really strange voice. Her voice always
That's Captain N, though.
I think that was Captain N.
Yeah, that's Captain N. That whole era is weird and dumb, and at one point Deke released DVDs of all of that stuff, and I thought to myself, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, you know what you're getting for Christmas now, James.
I actually gave that Santa to somebody for Christmas. I gave that to someone. That is a thing that happened, and the response was, why? And I'm like, exactly.
It had to happen.
I just, I've got different, I had different childhood. I didn't watch these shows, I guess. And, it, you know, like you say that the Super Mario show was low budget. Can you imagine how much of a budget do you think the dubbing would have had?
Oh my God, I would just love to have seen you experience the opening rap of that song poorly dubbed into French.
No, it was unbearable. I never watched it, even though I liked Nintendo, you know.
As a kid, I think someone had told me that Captain Lou was a wrestler. I didn't actually watch wrestling as a kid, so I didn't know the context for that, but I do remember recognizing that he was more of a celebrity than the guy playing Luigi.
Sure.
And yet, even as a kid, you watch it and you think, the guy playing Luigi is actually a better actor. And he's more of a, I think he looks like he might have some theater training. Like he actually is a legitimate performer. Whereas Captain Lou, look, he's a pro wrestler. Like he has a certain degree of, you know, theatrical skill in order to do that.
It's all bluster, though, right?
He's not really an actor. I mean, he's not really playing Mario as a character.
This was a territorial era wrestler, too, so this isn't like high production value, you know, lots of rehearsals.
No, I mean, he was at the time.
These were fat guys in leotards wrestling in the local gym.
Yeah, he's not the Undertaker.
Yeah, at the time, he was He was a wrestling manager for various tag teams, and you know, he was in there with like Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan, that kind of era. Yeah,
right.
So R.I.P. Mr. Danny Wells, the original Luigi, and you know,
the original human.
He got me hooked on the brothers. Let me tell you that.
No.
Nice.
No.
Shake your hips from side to side.
The brothers.
And that's the end of the show.
It is.
Yes. The end of my dignity.
So
as well.
If you want to know why the Wii U is having problems, it's that. That one line. That's it. Came back to haunt it years
Thank
later.
Thank you, Travis, for the trip down memory lane. All right. So that is going to wrap up this episode. Like I said, we will get to more of our backlog of listener mail next week, but you can send in your own thoughts. I'm sure that people are going to have some strong reactions to this episode, and we'll get them through a number of avenues. But if you would like us to discuss them on next week's episode, the best way would be to email, and the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And you can find more of the backlash and follow-up and commentary on what's happening with Wii U and 3DS and all these games that are coming out for those systems over at NWR, and I hope you will do that, especially over the holidays. If you have a little bit of extra free time, maybe over Christmas and New Year's, great time to catch up on some of the content that you've missed that you hear us talk about every week on Now Playing, and you know, read the PDF magazine and immerse yourself in the joy of Nintendo. I think we could all use a dose of that right now. So thank you very much for listening. I promise we'll be a little cheerier, a little more positive next week. We'll have some more space and some more time to process these events. And
yeah, for reference, these happened literally today.
Oh, the wound is so raw.
Yeah, everybody, just give your Wii U a hug tonight.
I know I will. I'm going to play it. I'm going to play it right now.
Yeah, I'm going to play it right after this podcast. I'm going to play a little bit of
John
it.
John is playing it right now.
Yeah. I have been for the
He's
last hour.
He's been playing
hour.
It the whole show. Monster Hunter stops for no one. So thank you again for listening. And we'll be back next week with a special Christmas episode before we probably take a little break for New Year's. So we'll talk to you then. Bye.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.
Paisanos, it's the Super Mario Brothers Super Show!
With the Mario Brothers and plumbing's our game, we're not like the others who get all the fame. If your sink is in trouble, you can call us on the double. We're faster than the others, you'll be hooked on the brothers. So hang on to your seat. Get ready for adventure and remarkable feats. You'll meet Koopas and Troopas, the princess and the